Welcome to the Dope Black Woman podcast, the podcast where we share stories of Black excellence as part of our safe digital sisterhood. I'm Leanne Levos.
I'm Rashan, but you can call me Shan.
I'm Livs.
This week, we're discussing being a Black female CEO with Renee Richardson. Hey guys, how's everyone doing?
Good, we're good.
So this week we have Renee Richardson, who is the founder and CEO of Broccoli Content, which is a UK-based podcast production company. So we're just going to jump right in. Renee, welcome. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. Hi.
How are you doing?
Yeah, you know, I'm good.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and what makes you a dope Black woman. This is something that we ask all of our guests.
Okay, right. I'm Renee Richardson. I'm the founder and CEO of Broccoli Content. This is a podcast company, but it could be more one day. I'm a dope Black woman because, I don't know, what do people say? They're awesome.
I hate talking about myself
to be honest.
Yeah,
humility, that could make you a dope Black woman.
I'm definitely not humble, I wouldn't say that. Yeah, no.
Well, you're awesome and creative. I mean, look at what you've come up with.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Yeah, let's say that because I'm awesome. I mean, that's why I would have said anyway. Like, I am awesome. Yeah, that's why I'm awesome.
Yeah, that works. Yeah, you're awesome. Yeah. That's all you need to do. I mean, yeah, as Liv said, being a Black female CEO is, there are not too many of you going around. So I think that says quite a bit about what you've been able to accomplish. And you look mad young, so.
That's some moisturization. Moisturizing. Black don't crack. We can't assume ages, guys. Yeah.
So, yeah, tell us a little bit about how you got involved in podcasting generally. Tell us a little bit about Broccoli Content and, yeah.
So I got involved in podcasting after, like, I think working in TV and film for 15 years. I quit the production company I was working in. I'd worked on production, like, on sets. And I was ready to throw it all in because I became jaded and I was going to become I was going to hopefully open a vegan cafe. I even trained as a barista so I can make good coffee. I was set. I was going to look for like small business loan. I was going to do it. And then a job description for a job at Acast, which is a podcast platform, came through my inbox. I read it and I was like, this sounds actually quite interesting. So I sent the person who sent it to me an email. I said, can I go for a coffee with this? Can I throw myself, like my hat in the ring? And she was like, oh yeah, definitely. Went for the interview and then I got the job. And that was my first, like my start in podcasting. I was a content manager at Acast.
Okay, nice. Dope. And did you always kind of love being a part of TV, film industry, radio? Like, what was it like growing up? How did you fall into that arena generally?
I mean, it's literally the only thing. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to do anything else because I've only worked in film and TV since I was 14.
Wow.
So, like, I did, like, a stint at Pizza Hut, like everyone else after school and stuff. But literally was a child actor, you know, went to stage school, went to the Brit school, worked in a post room at a talent agency from the age of 19. Oh, what, you went to the Brit school?
Yeah.
Oh, what year?
Alumni guy.
When were you guys there?
As in what year did we graduate?
Yeah.
2013,
because I'm 2014.
Oh, you guys were, yeah. I was there way before then when it was a rubbish. I was there the same year as Amy Winehouse.
Ooh,
like back in the day. And it was bad then, yeah. She left after one term. They don't actually admit that. Yeah, she literally came in and was like, no, I'm getting out. But of course.
You have pictures still in the photography room.
But the Brit school, they don't acknowledge that she left. Like, literally,
that's so
literally
funny.
She was only there for one term. And they gloss over that fact. But back then it was awful. It was really bad then, yeah.
So wait, Shannon lives, did you guys know each other at the school as well?
No, we were there at the same time. And I know when I first met Liv and she said she was from Brit, she showed me a picture of her friends and I was like, I know everyone in that photo but you.
Because when she was the year below, we didn't actually, like, we'd never have classes together or anything like that. So unless you knew someone who knew someone. Mm.
Yeah.
What did you guys study?
Such a small world.
BGC.
Done, love.
That's why we're here today, baby.
What did you study?
Dance.
Oh, wow. And then,
no, that was, there was an accident, though, because you know you can choose, like, what order you want, like, your top choice, your second choice and that.
Right, yeah.
My, I think it was, like, my third choice, dance. I wanted to do music, but I guess that course was full, so I ended up doing dance. Mm. And I just have, yeah, so I went, I carried on, because, what, you know, what else was I going to do? But I never wanted to be a dancer, like, ever. Mm. I just...
You were like, I'll just take it. Maybe it'll be like High School Musical.
Yeah, I mean, it was every day was like an episode of Fame. You know, I did enjoy
it. Just a little bit.
Everyone's singing in the canteens and all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, it was normal. Jumping on tables, just breaking out with song. Yeah, you know, I loved it. That's when I refer to like my musical, when my life was a musical.
The Brit
years. Yeah, those years, like 14 to 18. That was my like musical years when like people just break into song over lunch.
Oh, wow. I should clarify to Leanne, BDC was broadcasting digital communication.
Yeah, so that was going to be my next question actually.
Like media basically.
It sounds like porn.
That's so mad how life is full circle, because look, everybody on this call now basically has come together in this space. That's kind of crazy.
It's so beautiful.
So Renee, tell us how you transitioned from doing dance to becoming the first UK production company to partner with Sony, because that's massive.
So when I was a child actor, like I knew from my first audition on my first day on set, that was at that point, and then I realized, oh my God, I can't act, but it was too late. But I knew I couldn't make a career from it. But I had to do it through school. Same as dance. I knew I was never going to be a dancer, but I had to just work my way through school, you know, because, you know, why not? But basically, when I was in the talent agency, my first goal was to be like an agent. And so because I went straight from basically college, I had a year off where I was trying to make it as a dancer. Then I just got a job as in the post room of a talent agency, and I knew I wanted to like work my way up and be an agent. In the talent agency, you learn a lot about the business of entertainment, because that's basically where everyone gets their job. That's where all the deals are made. That's where literally if you're a writer, a singer, actor, director, like you're all represented. The talent agency I worked at, PFD and United Agents, they're like the biggest ones in Europe. So they had massive, massive talent. So I think Keira Knightley, Ricky Gervais, Henry Cavill, like they've got all the big British stars, like they're represented there. And so I got to learn from like the best agents in like some of the best agents in the world. So I picked up the business side, and I realized I didn't really want to be an agent, because it's kind of like recruitment, and which is why I went into TV production, because I wanted to make the actual shows. And so I ended up working at Sprout Pictures, which is Stephen Fry's company, and then Drama Republic. They make The Honourable Woman, and they made Black Earth Rising. And it's basically started by the exec producer who exec produced Peaky Blinders and Billy Elliot. I worked there, loved it, but that's when I became jaded about diversity. And I was like, oh, no one has a chance. So that's why I was going to leave. But I think those skills that I acquired from my years, like working my way up in a talent agency and working in a production company, gave me the skills in order to run a business. So when Sony were interested, I already had a business plan. I already had my purpose for the company. I already had my story. Like, you know, every company should have a story. I had the story. I mean, it's true, but I have a story. And I had all that in place. So when I came to meet like one of the head honchos in New York, he came over here, so I was in London. I just told him who I am, what Broccoli does, and they kind of bought into it immediately.
I was just going to say, it's interesting that you mentioned he was American, because broadly speaking, there is this idea that in terms of diversity, in terms of black opportunities, America is so far ahead than Britain. Do you think that's true of radio and podcasts? People talk about in terms of the film industry a lot.
So my opportunities in audio, the big ones, came from America. So when I worked in a talent, when I was a producer, it was a terrible experience, but it was still a Brooklyn-based company. And for me to even get that job as the producer, I just don't think I would have here in the UK at all. And the Sony deal, yes, it was their Sony Global. So Sony Global may have made a commitment to move into podcasting. But the initial introductions and initial meetings were from Sony UK. But that might also be because their music. Music has still, obviously, it's diversity problems and loads of issues. But there are, especially in Sony, a lot of black people within Sony who work at... who work at Sony. So I think in audio, if you want to get opportunities, 100%, in TV, film, 100% has to be from America. America's terrible if you're a black person. Like, some of my worst experiences in media have been working with American companies, because you're really, you're black in America. that's a different story to being black here, honestly. But the opportunities that I got from working with American companies, that would never happen. I wouldn't be in the position I am now if I didn't do it. If I just stuck with the UK, forget it, I'd still be an assistant.
And is that something you think you can do remotely?
I did it all remotely.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I would not live in America. I used to want to, but no, you couldn't pay me to live there. I did it all remotely. I would go over a lot, like maybe once or twice a quarter I'd go to New York. But I did it all working remotely, because of the internet.
But then the time difference, no?
Yeah, it's only 5
hours.
Must have
been a huge...
It's fine.
It's only 5 hours.
5 hours. You get a head start on the day. It's fine.
Mad.
How did it work when it came to like making those connections? Was it like LinkedIn?
I'm not on LinkedIn. It's Twitter. I made all of the connections I've made in podcasting.
Wow.
Is Twitter. From when I got into podcasting, I was having conversations. When I was at Acast, one of my goals as content manager, not goals, jobs, like my role, I had to sign shows onto the platform. So diversity, I'm very passionate about the whole time. I deliberately went after trying to partner with black shows, regardless of where they were in the world. So I made a lot of connections with black US podcasters right at the beginning when there were hardly any. And that's how I met like Berry from Podcast in Colour. Joy Marie, she now works at Facebook, but she used to have this podcast called Joblogs. It was one of the first like black business podcasts. That was one of the first shows I signed at Acast. But she introduced me to she got me into the New York radio group, and she introduced me to a lot of people. So basically what I would do is I'd reach out, I'd follow, you interact with people on Twitter for ages, and then I'd be in New York, I'd be like, hey, send them a DM, I'm going to be in New York, do you want to go for a coffee? And that's how the Twitter relationships became real relationships. And a lot of the opportunities that I've had in America have been through those people I initially met on Twitter who went into real relationships, who referred me for jobs.
Amazing. I was just going to ask, because a lot of the women that we've had on the podcast who enter into kind of non-traditional careers often say how much backlash that they receive from their family and friends, because, especially in black communities, you're expected to go down a particular route. So I'm just wondering, in terms of your background and kind of your upbringing, what was that like when you told your parents what you were going to do, were you kind of brought up with values that allowed you to be more open and was flexible?
My mum has backed me for anything. She's always said, like, anything you want to do, you can do it. She actually convinced me not to go to university because she knew I hate authority figures, which is quite rare. But she just knew I wouldn't get on there. I wouldn't. Like, I was one of, I think 5 people at the Brit School who've ever been banned from the Brit Awards. I'm one of them.
Stop it now.
Like, I'm not even lying. Because I just don't get on with authority figures. I just tell it like it is. and they don't like that. So my mum, when I got into university, I got into a sound engineering course at Kingston University, and my mum was like, are you sure you want to go to university? Are you sure you need that? And I was like, I don't. So I didn't go. She was like, see what happens over the summer before you go. And basically, I mean, we couldn't afford it anyway, but like, because it was like a private course, because it was at their gateway, these studios. So it was like a proper kind of like an apprenticeship slash degree slash, you know, and it was really expensive. So we couldn't afford it anyway. But she was like, see what happens over summer. Like, she was basically saying, don't go.
Take your time.
Yeah, take your time.
About
have
it.
A think. Find yourself.
I love that mask at home.
Wait. So we have to ask what happened at the Brit Awards. Like, what's going on with us?
No, they just hated me. The school. Basically, it's true. Basically, I would say, so I'm not difficult, but I just push back. Like, I'm not gonna, if you're a dancer, like, why have you not got any dance credits? Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're a teacher.
And so you would beef the teachers.
Yeah.
Have you been in a fucking movie?
I went to a different stage school before the Brit school, and my teachers, like, so my tap teacher was in Stomp. Before the Brit school. So I was like, I was learning tap from an excellent teacher. And when, like, I had, like, my drama teachers were in, like, one of my dance teachers was in West Side Story at the time. So, like, there'd be a lot of temps because the actual teachers were out working as well. So you were getting the full, like, this is what it's like to be a working performer. At the Brit school, everyone just had time to teach. And I'm like, why? And then they... And then they like tried to convince me to go to university to study, to become a dance, like to study dance at university. I was like, if I wanted to be a dancer, university is the last place you go. And so I would just push back. And obviously they didn't like that. So when there was a train crash, quite a big train crash, like the Hatfield train crash or something. And everyone, basically all the trains were stopped. So it was me and everyone who went to the Brit school because we were all stuck at Victoria. Everyone went in and they used it as an excuse to ban me. They said, I can't go to the Brit Awards. And everyone met LL Cool J. They met Destiny's Child. They met Craig David. I was at home.
Stop it now.
I watched it on TV.
The bad mind is unreal.
Yeah, so that's what they did the first year. And then the second year, we had the opportunity to dance for Mystique. And everyone was like, oh no, we should focus on the anniversary show because we were all there last year. And I was like, well, one of us wasn't. But I didn't get to go that year either. So basically, I've never been.
Nah. They were like, we're going to get you a second time. We're going to find a way. Like, we don't care.
Yeah, but I've never been. And like, that's literally like, and everyone's who's listening is probably like, oh, well, I haven't been to the Brit Awards. But like, that's a Brit school thing. You go to the Brit Awards. Like, that's literally it. And I've never been. So thanks.
Do you know, things have changed. Things have changed a lot, to be fair. If it makes you feel any better, if you win our year, you wouldn't have gone anyway. Because they only take me to your music now. They don't take the other strands. So you wouldn't have gone anyway.
So before, the whole pit used to be the whole Brit school.
Yeah, no, they ain't got money like that no more.
Yeah. But like...
And then when it was my turn, they pulled everyone's name out of a hat.
Oh, really? Damn.
You got the short end of the stick, Shan.
No, honey. I was there.
What?
But it's still but I ended up, because now I work with Sony, I ended up meeting one of the organisers of the Brit Awards. I was like, well.
Let me tell you something.
And I ended up telling him. But I did go this year. I went to the Brit Award parties. And I was like, do you know what? Actually, I wasn't missing anything. Because I'm old now and like I wouldn't be at home, to be honest.
That's so funny.
But yeah.
I just wanted to touch on something you mentioned earlier about LinkedIn. You said that you don't have it, which is quite interesting to me because you're a businesswoman, you're a CEO. And, you know, I've always kind of felt that there's this thing about not just LinkedIn, but about building networks and building connections and the pressure to do that. And a lot of these websites don't serve Black women very well, which is why you see branches off like BYP doing their own thing. So like, you know, what's been your experience with that kind of thing, trying to build connections and networks and being a Black woman?
I've literally only built, so like I say, Twitter, I only pretty much only follow Black people. So I've only, when I was making my connections in podcasting, I only reached out to Black people in New York and in LA and people of colour in America. And I've not tried to network with anyone else at all.
And so I guess you've
like I don't even pretend. I'm like, everyone knows if you're in audio, everyone knows I do not go to the events. I do not participate in the industry because the industry is racist. Why am I participating in that? I'm over here making my own thing, and everyone wants to be part of my thing over here anyway.
No new friends. No new friends.
Sorry.
But I don't overlook the racism. I don't overlook it. So I don't participate.
Do you think in some ways that's made it not easier, but you've managed to avoid a lot of the challenges that other Black women might face because you just choose not to engage?
I mean, it's been extremely hard, but like, it's like, if I don't do it, if I'm going to just participate, how are things getting better? So I don't get involved in it at all. And it makes things hard. It definitely makes things harder for you because you're literally on your own trying to like pave this way, but it pays off. And now look at everyone, look at signing my Equality Pact. No one else is. They're signing mine. So
tell us what is the Audio Pact?
So the Equality in Audio Pact is basically, it was a challenge to the audio industry. I wanted to have 5 actions that any company of any size could take today. And the reason I wanted to do it at that point, because I've been talking the diversity talk the whole time, like since I've been in media, but especially since I've been in audio, in podcasting, like it's not something I'm quiet about. And I make sure people know I'm not happy with them. I at them, I've been doing that for years. Like I call it out, they just ignore me, but I'm like, I still did it, so whatever. but with the pact, I had the 2 points. One was pay interns and one was hire LGBTQIA+ Black people, people of colour, and other minorities on projects that are not only related to their identity, because, you know, you'd hire a Black person on a Black show, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, and then I went to my Broccoli team and they came up with the other 3 points. Like, the task was, you know, something that's actionable today. So we came up with the 5, and then the next day we put it out to, I basically tweeted it. Because everyone was like, how are you going to share the message? And I went, I don't know, I'll tweet it and at some people. Did that. And then it took off like in ways I didn't know could. Because normally I get ignored when like I talk about diversity. For some reason, obviously the time is right, because everyone's like realizing they're part of the problem. And the tweet just took off. And by the end of the first day, we had 50 companies sign it. And by the end of the fourth day, the BBC had signed it.
Yeah, let them know.
And it just took off. Like, Bauer have signed it. Like, the biggest podcast company in the world have signed it. Gimlet and Wondery. Spotify have signed it. Like, it's taken off globally. And that was just my challenge to the industry to be better. Because everyone knows, like, we know you're not good. And we know you've been doing it on purpose. But now's the time. There's no, like, the excuses are over. Like, just sign the pact.
And I think it's great because I think there are really tangible asks that are very clear, very straightforward. There's no like misinterpretation around, because, you know, sometimes when you put together a diversity plan, it's like, ensure that, you know, you have more people of color in your
space.
It's
very wishy-washy.
And that could be anything. Yeah, exactly. So the fact that you've literally said, no, you need to pay your interns. No, the people of color need to be on projects that are outside. I think the fact that they're so tangible and very clear is super important.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the second point about it not being about people's identity, I think that's like such an important one, because I used to work with Libs on a podcast before, and that's something we always made sure we didn't do. So the podcast was aimed at Black people, but like, we wouldn't have someone who was Muslim on because it was Ramadan.
Yeah, exactly. Because a Muslim person is a person.
Exactly. And like we'd have normally like 3 to 4 guests, and we'd always make sure like one was a guy, one was a woman, there was a class difference in them. Someone usually was from the LGBT community. Someone might have been disabled. Do you get what I mean? And it wasn't because it was like a tick box system. It was because she was genuinely passionate about getting those different voices and experiences heard. And I find it so frustrating when I'm consuming content and I see a black girl. Even like, I think part of the issue, especially with the Black Lives Matter thing, there's a lot of companies that are now like, hey, Black Lives Matter, let's hire black people. Or you're hiring them to do what? The jobs that they're tired of doing. Like, I think it was Tolly that tweeted, and she was like, I think Tolly from The Receipts tweeted about, I'm tired of writing about my trauma. Like, I don't blame you. Like, there's other things for you to write about. Do you get what I mean? Like, let a white person write about their trauma. Why aren't they doing it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly it. Like, and that's why I wanted actionable things, because Broccoli doesn't have a problem being diverse. Like, we've been doing it even when I was a company, just me on my own at home. Like, every project I made was still diverse. And it's like, because I can do other things. And one of the, like, what I learned when I was working at the American company was they just saw me as a black sexless blob. Like, half the time I wasn't even a woman. I was just like, they need, I need a black. So I was just a black. Mad. I wasn't like a black woman. I was like, we need one. Here's one.
And it's interesting when the industry talks about diversity. I mean, especially talking about broadcasting, television, radio, is there's so much. Like, what I love about your audio pack is it's like, this is, I think, one of the big hurdles that big companies struggle to get over is, you know, hire people diverse at like the, to get them through the door, like the apprentices, the interns, and then they never make it to the editors. They never make it to, you know, levels or upper echelons. It's like, oh, getting them through the door, but actually helping them up the ladder is a completely different thing.
But yeah, like with the hiring and the people moving up, if you look at the BBC, like there's, or just anywhere, there's loads of assistants who are black. And then, but where's the commissioners that are black? Well, are there any? I don't know. There's one. I've seen one, but there might be two. But like, there's hardly anyone. And it's like, what do you do? And is it because you're just not hiring them? Is it because they leave? Like, what is it? And I think there's just a wider, big cultural problem with people like to hire in their image. I do it too. Like, I will hire more black people just because you do hire. It's one of our biases. I admit my biases. We all have them. But the white people at the top currently don't admit their biases. So they would be like, I just hired the best person. No, you didn't. You hired in your image. You hired someone who looks like you, who you're comfortable around. That's what you hired. So I think when people acknowledge that, things will be better. But currently they're not. So you won't have the people rising to positions of power.
And so with the equality pact in place, like, what does the future of podcasting look like for you? Like, what's the ideal scenario?
I hope more, like, diversifying the leadership. I hope the content, like, you'll have more people of colour and black people on shows that are just about anything. So, like, a cooking show, a sports show, a health show. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't do sports. But I could. I could exercise. I just choose not to. But do you know what I mean? Like, but I have interest. Like, I watch TV. Why can't I have a TV show? Like, as in a review show. Do you know what I mean? Like, I could do an Office rewatch. I watch The Office every day. So, like, I have loads of interests that are unrelated to being black. And I hope that's where the podcasting industry goes.
I think it's interesting you say that. Not so much with podcasting, but with production or content instead. I think it's Link Up TV, and they've got like a series where they have like a celebrity or an artist that comes in, and then their fan comes in and they like cook them a meal.
Mm.
But like, that's not really a format you'd normally see within the black market or the black industry. It's normally something you'd see with like white pop culture. That's something you see on like Good Morning Britain or whatever those morning programs are. You see all the time on there, and there's rarely ever a black guest. And if they are, they're doing like Korean style vegan meal.
Exactly. Like, I keep saying, like, on Apple there's a section, Apple Podcasts, and there's a section, it's called Life at Home, like a collection, and it has 98 podcasts recommended, because I looked at all of them, and there was only one visibly POC host out of 98. And bearing in mind the categories are like in the kitchen, in the garden, book lovers, self-reflection, incredible listens, parenting. You know, I eat, I have a garden. I'm not a parent, but people are parents. I can reflect. I eat books. I read books. But it's like, I could, you know, black people do all of these things. The For the Kids thing, they've got a For the Kids section in that, and it's all white shows, right? And you know, there's everyone loves to say, like, kids aren't born racist. And it's like, they're not, but you make them racist from age two. So there are little racist toddlers because you guys make them.
It's true. And it's funny how what you were saying about, you know, people forgetting that you have interests outside of wanting to talk about being black or blackness. Like, and it happens to me all the time. Like, someone sent me an episode. I think it was a radio show about ballerinas and about black ballet. So, like, you know, this company that tried to diversify the ballet industry, which is interesting. But she sent it to me and she was like, oh, Olivia, you would love this. And it's like, I have no interest in ballet. I've never spoken to you about ballet. I've never been to see ballet. Like, I don't just suddenly go, oh, yes, this has me all over it. Because, do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't think you actually know me. You think you know me, but you don't.
Yeah, exactly. But that's exactly it. It's like, we have interest. And so the first battle is to be seen as a human. Because currently we're not. We're seen as like a black thing. When you have a black problem, like, oh, let's talk to the black one, they know. And because even like when I had a meet, because obviously I've been having meetings with everyone about, like, I mean, as in white people, about like everything now. And like, I had one meeting with a guy at a production company and he named three black staff members. And he's like, oh, you know them? And I went, no, I don't.
Why would I?
I don't know all the black people.
Ever.
And I know white people. I live in England. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
like, it's Leanne just absolutely ridiculous.
Wait. I was gonna say, I live in England and I don't know any white people.
Leanne has no white friends. This is like an ongoing
I have
joke.
Zero white friends.
I mean, I know loads. I grew up in Dagenham. Like, I went my school in my first stage school was in Hammersmith, and there was 85 kids or something like that, and there was only two black ones. I was one of them, so it's like I had to know white people. I had to. Half my family's white anyway as well, so literally from day one.
Day one.
This is the Dope Black Women Podcast.
One of the things that I think is really interesting about, you mentioned that, you know, so much of these conversations have come off the back of the Black Lives Matter movement, that it started off talking about racism, police brutality, those kind of things, but has fed into the media industry, the music industry, business, sports, etc. Do you think, because for me, it always feels like a catch-22. Like, it always feels like, oh, it's great that we're having these conversations. Like, it's great that people are finally listening. But also, why did it take trauma? Why did it take death? Why did it take an act of such violence in order for people to have these conversations? And now, also, what's really interesting is that people are saying, oh, it's gone too far. Because, you know, at the moment, everyone's talking about voiceover actors and white and black characters shouldn't be played by white voiceovers.
I agree, but yeah.
Seems like they such shouldn't. A basic thing. I'm so sorry.
But the thing
someone tweeted the other day, I think someone tweeted, I can't remember who it was, I'm not going to make up the name, but someone tweeted, like, I'm taking down my post of this character because I recognise that it should be this and that. And I'm like, why did you apply for that? Like, how did you get given that?
Because the thing is, it's like the same. Scarlett Johansson hasn't made any statements yet because she doesn't care. But it's the same thing. She was like, I can play a tree, I can play whatever race I want because I'm acting. It's like, no, that's not what the point is. And it's like, white people, it's only white people who are complaining. They want to play everything. And everyone, sorry, my dog's growling. But they want to play everything. And it's like, do you know what? Just give, and we say, do you know what? Because BoJack Horseman was one of the latest, the Alison Brie, the Arctic, the actress who played Diane. And I remember watching, there was an episode of BoJack where Diane goes to Vietnam to discover her roots because she was, I think she was adopted and she didn't really know her Vietnamese heritage. So she went, and I watched that episode. It was really great. But then I was like, hang on a minute, let me Google who actually is playing Diane. And that's when I found out it was a white woman. And I was like, oh no. Because I was like, because I'm saying yes, because then people were like, when Alison Brie said it was a mistake, she did that this weekend, and they were like, but BoJack's a horse. Yes, white people, play the horse, play lady, play the cat, play the dog, do you know, Mr. Butterfingers or whatever he's called, play the dog, play everything. Play everything, but don't play when it's a human character that's a different race. Just don't play that. You've got all the other characters, and it's not enough. They want everything. Because, like, yes, same... you're not going to get a horse to play the horse, obviously.
No, but I think it's interesting. I'm playing devil's advocate here, but I think it's interesting because I have seen black people tweet and say, you know, all we wanted was for these men to be held accountable and for police brutality to stop. And now it's become... Because I saw a tweet, basically someone said, I think, you know, I have a conspiracy theory that, like, it's blown out to become about more things to take it away from the original point to make Black Lives Matter movement look like they were unrealistic. Do you see what I mean?
I think that's a really narrow way to look at things, because if you discover George Floyd, if anyone has watched that video, or if you read about Elijah McClain, Breonna Taylor, you know, any of the names, they're not treated as human beings. And do you know why that is? It's because media shapes our society. Media shapes our perceptions of black people. So when I was growing up, the only black people you would see was, luckily we had Desmond's, but apart from that, it would be the black people who were mugging people on the bill or Crime Watch.
Yeah.
So what does that do for the wider community, society, sorry, what do they think about black people? Black people are criminals. That's a society narrative. So the Black Lives Matter, in order, you can... get the police officers should go to prison. But does that change the perception of black people in the society? No, that comes from media. If you only have white people playing all characters, if you only have, what's her name? Scarlett Johansson playing every race, Angelina Jolie playing mixed race women and things like that. Mm. What you're saying is that only white people matter. That is what you're saying. Yeah. So in order for black lives to matter, you need to change media. Because Black Lives Matter is everything. It's every aspect of our life. I know I want to see more black female CEOs. I want to see more black CEOs. I want to see black people who are scientists on just being normal. I want to see a black woman talking about how much she loves yogurt on TV. I want to just see anything, but we're not.
Alpo.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I just want to see those things. So until you change media, black lives won't matter. So it is a bigger thing. It's not detracting. It's the same. They're one within the same.
I feel like from listening to you speak today, I feel like you're very intentional with, like, agendas that you have, ideas that you have, passions that you have, your goals. You're very, very intentional with it. But something that I've dealt with a lot is actually imposter syndrome. I'm interested in seeing if that's something you've ever experienced yourself.
Maybe. I don't know, because I've always, like, a lot of my friends joke that I have the attitude of a white man.
Have the confidence because of a white man.
I think I deserve everything. I am not grateful for any opportunity I've had because I deserve it. And so I realized quite early on that no one knows what they're doing. Like, I can have meetings with, like, the CEO of Sony, or like when I had that business meeting with the guy from New York from Sony to do my deal, or like meeting the head of BBC, or like emailing with the head of Bauer and things like that. Because they're just people. They're just people. I don't care. No one knew what they were doing. Everyone's making it up. don't forget, I got into this industry when I was 14. Like, I've seen everyone makes it up. It's all made up.
That's so true.
So I can also make up and then, you know, wing it until it works.
It's true. And especially in podcasting, you know, it's still a relatively new industry. So people are still finding their feet of what the best methods are. Mm. Like, no one has, you know, the exact, this is how you make a great podcast and this is how it's done. Like, people are still working it out.
Yeah, people talk with authority, but everyone's making it up. So I don't feel, in that sense, I haven't really suffered from imposter syndrome, because I'm not grateful for the opportunity. I'm just
where did that come from?
Not being like, grateful. I'm probably spoiled, I imagine.
No, not being grateful. But like just that kind of giving zero fucks. Like how do you even... Because so many young women we know, and I think this is important for other young women to hear, do suffer from imposter syndrome. I mean, I'm a political scientist, and when I walk into meetings with like old white male philosophers, sometimes I have a little bit of imposter syndrome, even though I've done the work and I do have the knowledge. So, I mean, yeah, how does that, how do you, where do you get that from? Is it just your upbringing?
I think it's genuinely your parents. I think a lot of people, their parents, so like I said, my mum talked me out of going to university, right? A lot of parents could say, you could be anything, just get a good education. There's a caveat. That's a caveat. So that's saying you can only be good if you do this. My mum was just like, you could be good.
Yeah.
Regardless. She was like, actually, you don't even need the education. Just do it. So I'm like, so a lot of parents put the caveat in your greatness from birth. They say you can do X, Y, Z if you can do this. So my mum just said to me, you can do it.
That's so interesting.
My whole life, I just assumed I could do it. Like there's never been a point where my mum was like, oh, like she's very cautious. She's like, oh, should you send that message? But I'm like, I'm doing it, because like she already made me. It's too late. She created this monster. But like, I think it's that my mum never put the caveat in anything I can achieve. She never said it's because if I do this, or if it's XYZ, if I achieve that, if I do this. She always just said, you can do it. And I think that's the key, because a lot of people have to, like, it comes with age as well, but like a lot of people have to unlearn what their parents, like what restrictions their parents put on them. Because parents are just people. Parents put restrictions on their children because they didn't have necessarily not the ambition, but the dream, the vision. Because we're all just restricted by what we can see and what we feel we're doing on our surroundings. But I was always a dreamer. I have only, like, I am obsessed with American television. Like, I always just saw the world. I was never, Dagenham was never going to hold me. Do you know what I mean? And as soon as I got internet connection that I have control of, that's when I was making my connections in the world. Because I'm like, why am I just sitting in London? Forget it. The internet's here. And that's what I was doing. So I think it's, a lot of people have to unlearn their parents' restrictions. But my mum never put any restrictions on my dreams.
And do you have any, advice for women who are feeling that imposter syndrome now? And, you know, obviously we're at an age where it's difficult to unlearn things sometimes. Mm. Or just women who want to strike out on their own and do something that's not traditional, whether it's podcasting specifically or just something else?
I think you've got to have self-belief. I'm a big fan of research, first of all. Like, as long as any industry you're in, research it. Now, that's one of my pet peeves. I meet a lot of people who don't do research. Google is free. Research. But research empowers you with the knowledge. Like, once you learn an industry, like as close to the back of your hand as you can, but whatever industry I was in, like, when I was in film and TV, I was reading Deadline every day. Like, I was in with, like, oh, this show's getting made. Oh, this crew's, like, got crewed up, and, oh, that person's writing this. And I just knew what was happening in the entertainment world, like, because I was interested. In podcasting, I'm interested. So I know who's here, there, and everywhere. So if you have that knowledge, you just believe in yourself. Like, I know self-belief is hard, but you've just got to believe that you can do it, because every single person is making it up. Everyone.
Everybody.
So have the attitude of a white man, you know?
I love it.
Just say you deserve it.
It's entitled to me.
Yeah, yeah, you're entitled. Like, I'm going to have this because I can. Yeah.
What are, like, some of the peaks of your career thus far? Like, what are the things you've loved working on? What kind of things do you want to work on moving forward? Like, what kind of legacy are you trying to build?
Yeah, I really enjoyed, and I always talk, it's funny, because at the beginning of this year I was like, I'm gonna talk about race less, because like I made that show a couple of years ago. Now it's like, let's move on. And then it went to number one this year, so I was like, okay, I'm talking about race again. But About Race with Ready Edo Lodge was definitely a highlight, because that show has completely changed my career trajectory. And it's not that we, like, Rennie kind of was, obviously she's a star, but like she wasn't at the time when I first reached out. It just basically gave me the confidence. It solidified that I know what I'm doing. I was the only person who contacted Renée Edo Lodge before her book came out to make a podcast. Like that basically means everyone in the industry are idiots. I did it. Me. And then the fact that I'd put in the like work with her and we were doing like pitching to the company that I worked for and things like that, it took, the whole process took like a year. But at the end of the year, her book had come out, and obviously then everyone wanted to work with her. But I was like, but she wanted to work with me because I actually contacted, it wasn't like a bandwagon thing. I wasn't just jumping on her hype because her book was a success. I was actually wanting to work with her before the book. And that's why she ended up working with me. But that just solidified that I am a talented producer, because it took me a long time to think, am I actually a good producer? And do you know what? I actually am. So I know that now. But it also, producing is like, yes, editing, story, da-da-da-da-da, but it's also finding talent to work with. And what I did then, back in 2017, I think, when I contacted her first, before the book came out, I was ahead. She broke records, British records, you know, all the book records. She's like the only black author to ever reach the top of the book chart. And she is now a New York Times bestseller. I was working with her back then. And it's like, no one wanted to. Everyone said the idea was broccoli. So what that showed me was that the industry do not know what they're doing. And so that will still be a peak in probably my career as a whole, because it really, especially when it went to number one, like this year, 2.5 years later, it just showed how ahead we were. Even though it took terrible circumstances, it just showed that everyone was wrong and we were right. And it's always nice to be proven right. You know, like even with Renée, like her book, like I can't speak for her, but you know, we both had our such struggles getting projects made and like getting listened to and things like that. And it's like, oh, and now look, zero promo. Look at us with a number one podcast and number one book with no marketing plan, just because it's like people want to listen to our work and read her work. So it's like, it just shows that I was right, everyone was wrong, and people should just listen to me because I obviously know what I'm doing.
More than these white men.
That's why I'm a dope black woman.
Jeez. Yeah, I was gonna say we've come to it at the end now.
See, I told you I'm not humble though. But like, yeah, that I think that will always be a highlight, because it just, you've really got to, because everyone was trying to tell us like no one would listen to that show, like they didn't want to make it. They said it couldn't be about race in Britain. They said it had to be for a white audience. They were literally giving us every opportunity and every reason to not make that show, and we made it anyway in my house, and it went to number one.
Wow.
Yeah, so like they were wrong. And that's my goal with the industry as a whole and broccoli as a whole, is to change the industry, because the people who are in positions of power now are not fit for purpose. So there is a new leader in town, and that's me.
Bam, bam. Do you think risk has something to do with it as well, that people aren't willing to take a risk?
See, I think, so I'm doing an actual talk on risk in a conference in Australia in a couple of weeks, because I was like, I don't see it as risk. Because I'm like, that's what you should be doing. Like, yes, TV and film are bad, terrible. But they, if you're white anyway, they will take a risk on your short film. So like, that's why short films exist. Because that's how you get, a deal with a studio, or that's how like you get signed by a, you know, a commercial production company from your short films. That's them taking risks, but it's not risk. That's just industry standard. That's how you find new talent. In audio, they're like, oh, it needs to be Gemma Collins. It needs to be, do you know what I mean? It's like, why does it? Like, what? What are you talking about? Getting a celebrity to do a podcast is no skill at all. You just give them money. Like, I could get any celebrity to do a podcast because everyone's got a price. You just find out what their fee is and you say, here's a project. The skill comes from finding new talent and developing it, working with them and giving them a platform for them to be highlighted. That's not risk. That should be the standard. But everyone else is just not creative. Honestly, I just think it's a lack of creativity, a lack of vision.
So what stories are you interested in telling moving forward? Because you said you're kind of like, you want to move on from the discussion about race. So what's next on...
So I've got loads of race stuff. No. So, so no, when I was saying the discussion about race, I meant the specific show.
Yeah, yeah,
because the show was called About Race. So I was like, I need to stop talking about that show because like it was ages ago. And then it's like everywhere. So we've got a show, we're literally in early development for a show about British slavery, because I think it's very clear. People don't know anything about it. Me too, because we're not learnt. You know, I'm reading now, and like I've been reading, like I did my Goodreads challenge last year and stuff. So I'm like heavily on educating myself. But like, there's still so much we don't know. So I want to do a series which would act as like an educational resource to learn about British slavery. We have a series called Anthems. It's currently Anthems Pride. But the next series will be Anthems Black. We had programmed our Anthems series at the beginning of the year. So it's literally not us jumping on the bandwagon. Like we decided this back in January when we created the show. But Anthems Black will be exactly like Anthems Women, Anthems Pride, but it will be black voices doing their anthem. And we have a Broccoli book club coming out later this year. Again, the books will be kind of progressive, very much taking into consideration what is happening in the world. So one of our first books will be Afropean, and then we'll choose books that are relevant to, so it'll be books like, you know, Not About the Burqa, Good Immigrant, and we'll do fiction and non-fiction. So it'd be books like The Hate U Give, like it would have like the, if the fiction book would have a wider societal context. When we, it won't just be like The Hunger Games, sadly, because I keep saying The Hunger Games, I love The Hunger Games, that won't be in it.
Hunger Games kind of has, I mean, like I, a that's class what I said, it's like that, like, yeah, that it does, that, definitely,
I mean, it's definitely it a glimpse. It's a glimpse into our future.
Yeah, but it's the whole thing about class, you know, you can make it work.
Yeah, I think it does have a societal context on, yeah, like how, yeah, the poor people with the no opportunities, the workers are down in District 12 working in the mines and the richies are in the capital. Yeah, so I think it does, yeah. But basically, but the so the book club's going to be like a progressive kind of, yes, social, informative book club. And then... yeah, that's it. There are podcasts that are coming out this year. And then I just want to keep on making content like that. Just, I always take into consideration the wider societal context. I don't want to just make shows for the sake of making shows, because everyone else does that. I want to, everything I make has a reason. Like, what does it say about our world? Who, what voices am I platforming? What conversations need to be had? And all of that. So that's what I've always done, and that's what I'll continue to do. And one day I want a Wicked. Book deal as well. I'll put that out there. I want a book deal. I have to write one, but I want it later this year. No. We'll see.
It will. It will.
I mean, I'm sure.
You deserve it. You're entitled to it. So yeah, speaking of which, are there any black podcasts that you want to shout out, whether or not you're working on them?
Yeah, so I really love, so I listen, sadly, I do listen to a lot of American podcasts because I don't know why. It's just different, I guess, to life, isn't it?
I feel like Americans put a lot of money into the podcast industry though, but we don't.
Oh, 100%. But I even mean like just even if it's like a talking podcast. Like, I think it's just an escapism to me. It's just something completely different. But let me look on my list of what I'm
What podcast do you guys listen to, actually? Shan Lives. Like, what are you listening to right now?
I love The Read. That's American.
Oh, okay. That's my number one. I didn't want to say them because I'm like, who doesn't say The Read?
But they just kill it every time. They're so funny.
Can I recommend an episode?
Yes.
Of a podcast? Because I was listening to, it's in context of the Black Lives Matter movement now and the understanding the police in America. And the hosts are POC. But it's called, the podcast is called Throughline. And the episode is called American Police. And it's basically about, and it was like, literally I was listening to it today when I went to walk to my car. But it's about how the American police like came to be. And mm-hmm. they used to, and originally, it's not originally that they weren't, it didn't, wasn't like an involvement from like slave catchers to the police. But basically, that's what they were. So originally, yeah. back in like 400 years ago, there were slave catchers, which would be the white men, you know, American men, who that would be your job, to catch the slaves. And then to if you caught them one, like kind of like walking around off the plantation, you would implement corporal punishment. So basically you whip them and sometimes like set your dogs on them and things like that. And it basically shows the violence. It shows a link, a direct link to the mentality of the police now. When they see a black man walking versus when they see a white man walking, because it's inherently in them to act this way, because it's kind of like that's kind of like the original American police, right? The slave catchers. Mm-hmm. And then they evolved into like, oh no, we've got to like install law for everyone. But it's not for everyone. It's like they treat obviously black people very differently to white people. And so I thought that was a really good episode, just detailing the history of it. And I think it's like an hour, so it's not that bad. And the new one, it's not by black people, but it is about, it makes you understand race again. And it's the new Slow Burn, and it's about David Duke, you know, the leader of the KKK.
Oh,
I will definitely listen to that one.
That's just started. And again, like they do have black producers on it. Yeah, so it will, I think they're good. That's what I'm listening to. I'm like, apart from The Read, obviously, and like my usual like fun shows. Yeah. But I always like to recommend, like, I think because of the, whenever I'm on a show, like recommending podcasts, I always try to think of the context of what is happening now. Like whatever is happening, and like refer you like to that. Cause I think it's interesting, again, this history. Cause even when with Slow Burn, like you can watch, I listened to like the Bill Clinton one, because I was like a kid at the whole Monica Lewinsky stuff, and I was like, oh my god, I didn't know half of this. Even when you listen to like, you know, when you watch the OJ documentary, I was like, yeah. I mean, I only remembered the court case, but then you hear all these things, you're like, oh my god, I knew nothing of this. So with things like that, we'll know of the KKK, but there'll be so many details of like the, what industries, organizations they've infiltrated, how deep in society, in American society, they are. I think it'll be a good series to listen to, especially with the context of Black Lives Matter now. And yeah.
I would say I love a good crime podcast. Like I love Serial.
Oh, love.
I love Limetown. I love Criminal. Like I think because like crime TV shows are really popular. Like everyone likes a good crime drama on Netflix.
See,
like,
I crime love podcasts, crime are sick. Dramas. I got weirded out with crime podcasts because they made real crime and Netflix are kind of doing that now. But like I was like, should we be making entertainment out of like this girl's murder? I don't know. Like it makes me feel, because you know, like they proper do hang, like what do you call them, cliffhangers. And I'm like, should we have a cliffhanger now?
I don't know. I think it's more the ones where you follow the story. So there's a really good one I listened to called Verified, which is about...
Yeah,
I listened to it. Oh, Verified is it. Yeah. So
my
that
friend
is about,
made that one.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. About this guy who used an app similar to Airbnb to lure young women in.
Was it Craigslist or was it not... Craigslist.
It was a house or couch.
Oh, yeah, couch surfer or something like that. Yeah.
And then lured these young women in and then sexually assaulted them. But I was going to say that, you know, I do think there is definitely a lack of black female voices within crime. I would 100%. Love to see that more, 100%.
There was one, I can't remember. There was a crime podcast. I actually recommended it on our Broccoli Instagram. But she... did an episode about it's a black hosted, I'm trying to find it now, crime podcast, and she had an episode about, is it Joy Marie,
the little white girl,
Joy Morgan, Joy Morgan, the, you know, the church, what church was it, I can't remember, Isaiah, I want to say, but she went missing basically, and then it was one of the church congregation had killed her. But she did an episode on that. It was really, really interesting.
Oh, wow.
My phone's on airplane mode, so obviously it won't.
Load. I will check it out.
But I'll try and find it. But yeah, it was really. So there are, but they're very few and far between. And a good place to find black crime podcasts though is Podcast in Colour, the directory, because she has a crime category, and then it's all like POC hosted, black and POC. Amazing. So like you can find loads. Yeah.
Oh wow. Yeah. No, I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah.
And where can people find you online?
Only on Twitter, because Instagram is for me. And it's Renee Rich. People try to add me and I have to decline them. it's Renee, R-E-N-A-Y, Rich on Twitter. I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on LinkedIn. Yeah, sorry. Just Twitter. And broccoli content, I should say, as well.
Oh yeah, because people can go to the website, check out what you're doing.
Yeah, look at the quality. Yeah, broccoli content on Instagram, Twitter, and yeah, we've got a website, broccolicontent.com.
Dope.
Amazing.
So thanks so much for coming on, Renee. We really appreciated it. And I think, yeah, there's definitely some inspiration there for women who are interested in creating their own spaces and building their own businesses. So thanks so much for sharing with us. Thanks so much for listening, guys. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get them from. On Twitter and Facebook, we're Dope Black Woman, and on Instagram, we're Dope Black Woman 1. We'll be back with you next week. Until then, stay blessed and unapologetically black.
All the way black.
Definitely black.
Blacktastic.
Hey!
I did it. Can I, because there was a natural pause there, something's burning. I need to turn it off. Okay. I'm sorry, because I could smell it. Sorry.
Yeah, go for it.
I will be back. But there was a natural pause and I will answer that. But Leanne can edit it. She can edit.